Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Boy, I miss the breeze we had the last couple of days. It is a scorcher outside today. It's one where if you have to be out in it, please, hopefully you've got some protection. At least something for your head and
lots of water
and absolutely as much liquids, many liquids as you can get. That's Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover joining us as he does here in hour number one of the Wednesday Drive. JC, how's it going?
It's good. You get through media days and you start to kind of, okay, man, and then you have that lull. Mm-hmm. Now, there wasn't much of a lull because of recruiting for this summer.
Oh, yeah.
But it's still not football. And now when you start to get, and I'm thankful for Hugh Freeze and this staff for letting us get to watch and talk.
I try to thank him just about every day on the air opportunities that we have.
And here's the thing. You don't have to see 11-on-11. We don't have to see a bunch of scrimmage things. But you get a chance to get a feel for the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to watch guys move, to see them. And it's felt like we've been so removed for the last 5 or 6 years.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even last year, they let us watch. And so, but it gives you a feel for a team. Now, it's still hard to know how it stacks up to the rest of the league.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no question, zero question, that this roster is light years ahead of what it was last year. Now, what will that mean in terms of record? Well, we'll find that out.
Yeah, you don't know in comparison to everybody else in the league, but in comparison to Auburn, last couple of years, it's not even close.
Not even close. And a lot of those are young. A lot mm-hmm. of them are new. You got transfers, all these things. It's fun to watch and to talk to former players who have watched this. And I've talked to two the last two times we've been out there. And the first thing they said was, yeah, this looks different. This is – It looks more like it's supposed
to
look like.
This looks like a competitive SEC team. It looks like.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So now you go all the other factors that play into it, but you've now given yourself a chance in year number two mm-hmm. to go out and compete physically, I believe. And so now we'll see what happens after that.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of this team looking different is players from high school football are showing up to college football, especially the best players are showing up looking different, but some of it, and I wonder how much of it is very hyper specific to Auburn, and Auburn is recruiting a different caliber of player.
That's it.
Okay.
Because, for years, people complain about strength and conditioning programs and all this stuff. Like, everybody works hard. The ones that look the best are the ones that get the best-looking kids coming into college. That's who looks
the best. Great. It's great for your strength and conditioning program where you get the better athletes and then try to get them
correct.
Even better.
And everybody develops.
Correct. Coach Dom, doing a great job. There's no question about that. What I'm saying is it's a lot easier to do it when you're starting with a better player or a better athlete or a bigger, more physical, more explosive athlete. And I go back to my old analogy. I could have trained my entire life. I wasn't going to block Reggie White one time. I don't care what trainer you gave me. I don't care what it was. It matters the raw ability you have, size, strength, speed, aptitude. All those things matter coming in, and it shows up in development because those guys they're starting at a point that's higher than a lot of other guys.
Yeah, and if it's any consolation, Jason, I feel like probably 99.8% of anyone who ever put on a pair of shoulder pads would have struggled to block Reggie White. Like, I think conservatively.
I ain't go Reggie anybody. It don't matter. I ain't blocking that guy either.
Sure, but, so. No, but Reggie White
that's
specifically.
It. I mean, you can like, do you can do everything you want to, and guys did.
Yeah.
But if that guy's better and you're a more talented athlete, then you're starting out at a point. Now, you still have to work to get to that next level, and it doesn't always happen. You know, and Jason Jones said today, it's like, look, when you get on campus, five-star, three-star, it don't matter, and it doesn't. But the more of those guys you have, that's individually it doesn't. Individually it means zero. Collectively, it means a lot.
Yeah, what Jason is saying, I suppose, is that just because you were a three-star coming out of high school doesn't prevent you from developing into a high-level player and maybe very soon, very early in your career.
Absolutely not. And that's the thing. Individually, those things can be true. Because you see it all the time in the NFL draft going, man, that guy was a three-star guy. That guy, well, yes, correct. Individually, guys can develop and do those things. As a collective unit for a football roster, it's hard to have 45 of those guys. It's much easier to have a bunch of those other guys and see a lot of them pan out than it is to count on having, whoop, all those guys just magically turned into those guys. It's harder.
Yeah, Auburn wrapping up week one of practice today as we got an opportunity. We're out there about 45 minutes this morning. And, man, we were talking just a little while ago, Dan. Jason, I was saying to Jason, really, it's a really wise move that they practiced. As hot as it was this morning, it's hotter this afternoon. I mean, this is the best time if you're going to be able to get a couple of hours of practice in to do it in the morning. And thus far, I mean, it you can tell how when you talk about strength and conditioning, Jason, haven't seen anybody that's looked really gassed out there thus far, and that's pretty amazing a weekend and the kind of heat that we're having.
Yeah, and I think it's a couple of things. First, it shows you the importance of the what they do now, which is almost year round. I mean, there's they take a few breaks here or there, because this time of year 20 years ago, they would have been out there trying to get guys in shape.
Yep.
And you would have had guys left and right cramping, dropping, like it would have been tough. Now you don't have to do that because they're ready. It allows you to be at a much more advanced pace in putting in your offense and defense, all those things, because you're not having to use practice as conditioning. Now you're able to just practice because those guys are ready.
One of the guys mentioned that the first couple of days, guys were, you know, there were players, and especially new guys, struggling with the heat and going for water breaks or cool down breaks or going to see the juicer, you know, over there squeezing the ice cold rag over guys' heads. But so, you know, I think someone even commented on how it hasn't been as pronounced.
Yeah, it's not like it's gotten cooler
after the first couple of days.
And I think wearing a helmet impacts that too, because you're not used to wearing, you know, you don't get to do that. And in high school, they've allowed that to where you can wear a helmet to kind of start to get prepared for it, because
but it speaks to the level of conditioning.
It does. Like, it absolutely does.
Because you're right. Because if it weren't, if this team wasn't at every position group. I mean, if you were talking about even the biggest guys on the team being unprepared to do this, it would be a very very challenging.
And it impacts your practice when those things happen, and when you lose guys and they're not out there, it impacts you greatly. And so, the more guys you can keep on the field, like I said, the more you can continue to move forward.
Well, the other thing that is very obvious when you look out there is the depth that there is everywhere. I mean, that also helps everybody. When the coaches are confident enough to keep rotating, they need to find out who's going to be in the play-in rotation. I mean, but I think they and we have a pretty good idea who the first 22 to 25 or so are going to be out there. But it's the next guys, and you're seeing them give the same kind of effort and not having any, you know, huge apparent drop off when you see the next groups.
Yeah, I think it's probably the biggest difference. You know, obviously top tier talent, but more SEC level players where you can afford. We've talked about it. Offensive lines, it is what it is. We've talked about that for a long time. Defensive line, really going back to before Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson, You've had defensive line groups for Auburn where guys had to play 75%.
Right. You didn't have the numbers.
Snaps.
No kidding.
And just think about how many games it cost Auburn. I mean, it's cost them two Alabama games at home. Now, there was other factors. But if you're a fresh fourth quarter defensive line, then those things are probably different.
And it was a problem. It was a problem before the last Malzahn season.
Yeah.
But it was such a problem for Harsin.
Oh, yeah.
Like lack of depth on the defensive line. That second year when Auburn is
Colby Wood and Derek Hall and
Marcus playing every snap.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that Jason Jones, one of the guys we got a chance to talk to today, and he said that. He was talking about with as much depth as there is and how Isaiah Rakes and Philip Bleedy and the who are the two newest transfers in, how they have helped so much, he said, because when you're playing every down, it's going to get sloppy. You're gonna have to be thinking. You're thinking to yourself, "Hey, I've got to try to save myself," and it's going to be sloppy. He said, and it's much better to have 30 plays that you want to see on film as opposed to 60 sloppy plays because you're trying to save something or you don't have anything left.
Think about it like this. Guys we feel pretty sure would be in a rotation. You go, hey, they feel pretty sure that these guys would be in a rotation to start with. And go, this is just, you go, Keldrick Falk, Zykevis Walker, Bobby Jameson Travis, I think is the guy that's in the mix there, Jason Jones, Philip Bleedy,
Rakes.
Isaiah Rakes.
Yeah, no question.
And so you start, Malik Blockton, I think he's probably going to be
Gage
in there.
Gage Keys,
Trill Carter.
You're running out of fingers.
You're almost at 10 guys, and that's really for the two positions because Keldrick Falk's going to slide inside and play some tackle some. It didn't really count like defensive end where you have a Morris Williams and when you have a couple of guys. That's almost for two interior positions, you're almost at 10 guys.
Right.
And I didn't mention DJ Reed, who's a guy that's in the mix.
You didn't mention DJ Reed and
TJ Lindsey. Right. There's 11 or 12 possibilities. That creates competition, too. We heard from Keontae Scott saying, hey, this wide receiver group is making us better because we didn't have that last year. The same thing holds true when you got another guy out there, Isaiah Rakes, going, hey, I'm fixing to go tear somebody up. The other guy behind him better go, I better do that too if I want to play.
Jason and Zykevious are two guys who have been here a long time. They're both seniors, and I would wonder are they battling?
They're at different spots. Zykevious just graduated this past Saturday, as a matter of fact. So
Zykevious is probably more of an end.
Right.
He would be
strong
with
side.
Keldrick.
I mean is they're both battling with new incoming players. I wonder if that would be something to watch. Can they? It's a little bit like Camden and Caleb at receiver. Can the holdovers hold off a lot of new challengers for snaps?
I can guarantee. I can just about guarantee you, Jason is going to play. I mean, he really seems to have matured.
Yeah, I think it's exactly right though. I think it's going to be he's going to play, but it's going to be 25.
I think he's glad. I think he's glad to try to go out there and play.
You go
20 to 30 snaps hard as you can every snap.
Jason Jones, 20, 25 snaps. And then if it's Rakes, 20, 25 snaps.
Mm-hmm.
And then you may be on
is
third.
Is it Carter? Is
and
it,
third down,
is it Travis?
It may
is it,
be.
Or is it Keldrick?
It may be Keldrick and.
With Kieron and.
Yes, and you may have three man front with a linebacker on the edge and maybe an extra. Maybe you put, maybe you got McLeod, Kieron, and you got Keldrick in the middle, and you have, hey, let's throw Amaris in there as another. There's a lot of things they can do when you have guys.
Is Malik coming in to spell Keldrick potentially? You think
Malik's more a tackle.
I think he's more inside, okay. But I do think as a potential third down, if you want to have some size, that's a guy that might potentially do some of those things. I mean, he's 290.
Yeah. Players rave about him for a true freshman.
Amaris is more the
classic end.
Yeah.
I think you could put him on the field if you move Keldrick inside in a pass rush situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're doing some things. But you mentioned Malik. Here's the thing about Malik. He's been able to watch Marcus Harris. He's been able to watch a few guys in front of him at Pike Road. He has grown up, and he's also grown up working with a great training group in Montgomery. That they have fundamentally, He's good, and he knows how to work. I mean, those guys get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go work out in Montgomery.
Is he ahead of your average freshman coming in on the defensive line? Would you say
he's more prepared than in terms of those things, okay, of knowing what to expect and the fundamentals of the position, and having been through not only spring but bowl practice. He got the head start there too.
Right.
I think that's helped him where he's more prepared. So yeah, I think he is in the mix to be a second or third guy, depending on kind of some situations. But I think he'll play as a true freshman. I do.
It's been interesting to watch. We'll talk a little about what we saw today. We'd love for you to join in, though. If you've got any questions, comments for Jason or any of us, you can call us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and that number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
We're just underway. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The results are in. Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. 4:20, Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind, sports wise?
Love the little tidbits we get. We were just chatting a little bit off the air about where some guys could slot in at different positions. You know, how playing time, how playing rotations could get smaller. We were able to talk to Jarquez last week, and he mentioned that Jarquez and Jeremiah, you know, were your were the primary options at kick returner. Something I think we got from Jeremiah as well today. Mentioned something like that, and then Keontae Scott mentioning at the end of our time.
Yeah, you asked him, is he still involved in punt returning? He went, oh yes. Keontae wants to be.
I know he wants to be. And just like Jarquez and Jeremiah Cobb want to be the kickoff return, if it's me, none of those guys are returning kicks for me because they're too valuable. Because of their, kickoff return, knock on wood, normally that's not a one where you have a lot of injuries. And the punt return's a little different because of the way you're blind. And, you know,
but you're looking up and people are bearing down on you.
I wonder if kick return is a way to get Jeremiah Cobb another touch.
I also
see what you're saying. Like, if he's valuable.
You're not a whole lot of those guys back there. And when I think about
– I think one of them's going to be back there.
Yeah, and that's fine. But I think when I think about Bryce Kane, when I think about Malcolm Simmons and Perry Thompson and some of these young guys, a way to get them involved.
I think of J.C. Hart.
Yeah, J.C. But, again, that's a position where you don't have a ton of guys.
No, that's true.
And so that's why –
And he's pushing for number two right now.
Absolutely.
Really,
I think J.C. Hart and Antonio Kite give Auburn a pair of – extremely talented second corners
and we keep hearing about Jay Crawford too.
he can fly. He's one of the fastest guys on the roster. JC may be the fastest guy on the roster.
A couple of players have said that he is, and then a couple of others have said maybe they are.
And Bryce Kane is there.
And I'm not gonna be surprised if Caleb Burton works his way into the punt returner competition because we heard about it all last year.
Yeah, I just don't know that he catches it well enough.
It was a guy apparently like he was one of those guys who'd worked really hard on that throughout last season to get himself
in
the mix.
We'll see.
The first thing you got to do is catch it. You better catch everyone.
And that's the,
ask. You know, just that's
it.
Look at last year. I mean,
correct.
You can talk 4th and 31 all you want.
If you catch a punt,
I don't think you're worried about 4th and 31.
No, and so. Yeah, there are lots of guys to fit in. I mean, but you think about just special teams in general. When you're more talented, and you have these young guys that can run and are fast and aren't afraid to go and be physical, then you think about the DeMarcus Riddicks of the world and these guys that are on special teams and T Love and all these safeties that you have. All of a sudden, it allows you to maybe we can give our where you're not having to play a guy, you know, every snap on defense, and then, you know, Jalen Simpson, where you're, you know, 30 special team snaps of games and all. all those things have an impact, and maybe you can keep guys fresh in a lot of other ways too.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Sky Bar. Let's get to it, and John is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Had a question regarding the kickoff return team. You know, I think it's really hard to get through an SEC football season with three scholarship running backs. I know Sean Jackson was a GA, and I've seen clips of him running the ball in practice. Is he back in that, like, running back four slot?
And oh, yeah, no, so hold on the Sean Jackson question. My understanding is Sean Jackson left the team earlier this summer, was removed from the roster online, and is now back.
He
and has been back since.
He was actually out there during the summer. Yes, he was as a student kind of coach thing, working in some camps and things. And then I think when they
after the Brian Battee
is not right. going to be able to come back. He decided, yes, he is out there. Him and Justin Jones would be the fourth kind of guys.
Right.
And they've got Cole Gamble's a really good walk-on.
Sean was an up-back, remember, on all the kickoffs last year.
Justin Jones looks the part.
You're right. That was my reasoning for the kickoff thing, going, look, you do have Sean Jackson. You got some other guys. But if I had other options, I would avoid using my running backs in those roles as much as possible.
And you love it as a chance to get the true freshman receivers a touch if that's possibility between Bryce and Malcolm and Perry and Cam.
Right. And the other thing I was going to say is I keep hearing, as much as, you know, we've heard about the Freeze Four, I think Coach Freeze still wants to have a running the football as an offensive identity. So it's not out of the woods to lose a back with a turned ankle or something like that. And I just feel like having Jackson back there and having a fourth capable running back allows you so much more flexibility in what you can do.
No, they want to run it because it's an RPO scheme. And to be able to RPO, the run is the first part. If you can't
turn into a robot at the end.
Yeah,
of that.
If you can't run it, then it's hard to have an RPO scheme. And so, yes, they want to run the football.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Sort of, you know, what spots with both the defensive backs, namely Keontae, and also your top running backs, Jarquez, Damari, Jeremiah. Like, do you view special teams as too risky for them because it could get them hurt and they're such an important part of your offense or defense?
Think of how many times you looked out there and Jarquez is on coverage teams. I mean, that's something I'm I really would go.
They're going to need
thank
one of those,
you very much, Jarquez, but I got plenty other for you to do.
Yeah, but they're going to need one of those Hannibal Lecter. You know what I mean? They're going to need one of those Hannibal Lecter scooters. Not a scooter, but you know what I mean? Like the gurney. They're going to need one of those to keep Jarquez.
Strap him in.
Yeah, they're going to need that to keep Jarquez off special teams because he talks about how much he enjoys contact, you know, the physical aspect of this game. And, getting to be a gunner at his size and strength, you know, it gives you a chance to go trade some paint with somebody, down the field. So yeah, I think that I would agree with you, Jason. Like I think that finding options at kick return and punt return who aren't starters or co-starters at running back would be ideal.
Yeah,
if
you can find those guys and you go, hey, we're comfortable with those guys catching the ball and be it that'll. Go back to that's the first part.
Right.
I think athleticism, there's a bunch of guys that can do it. Can they find somebody they feel good about
and it's
being back there catching punts, doing those things? And maybe you get a chance to check some of that out early on and to feel like, okay, this is going to work. That may be a positive about being at home. You get a chance to have some of those situations before you take it on the road.
Yeah, video game depth chart me would probably tell you if you feel good about all of them catching the ball, Caleb Burton at punt return, Bryce and J.C. Hart at kick return, something like that. You know, just guys that aren't just to keep. Maybe the true freshman receivers as a punt returner. I get that it's an opportunity to give someone a touch. I also understand why you wouldn't want your guys who are most your most used guys on offense or defense being in those roles as kick returner or punt returner. What about you, Bill? What would you?
Probably not, unless they're just so much better than anybody else that you have. Yeah. And then some, then you'd still have to put them out there sometime.
If I give you the magic
punt return is such a different animal than kickoff return.
If I give you the magic wand, who's the punt returner and kick returner's opening day?
I have no idea. We saw freshman receivers out there working at punt return today.
Opening
it was interesting
day
to see Perry Thompson and Malcolm Simmons and Bryce Kane out there catching punts
opening
today.
I'll bet you Keontae is opening day. But I think we'll see somebody else get some opportunities.
Hopefully you're forcing enough punts that you're giving somebody else an opportunity to get back ahead. Yeah.
I was thinking more, we're hearing that your starters at kick return or punt returner might be Keontae at punt return, Jarquez and Jeremiah at kick return. If you're pulling those guys out of those roles because you think they're too valuable for other stuff, sort of then it becomes...
I'm going Malcolm Simmons too, punt return.
Okay, and then who are your kick returners in that situation?
Two kick return guys. I'm going Bryce Kane and maybe Malcolm Simmons.
Okay, Malcolm and Bryce.
I think he's going to be involved.
And you know what? And if they're not, and I don't know how things are going to work out at receiver. If neither of those guys are your top four or five options at receiver, like if you're getting touches to other guys, if it's Cam Perry and the three graduate transfers.
Like, Perry's got a way to go. Perry's got a little ways to go before he's in the top three or four. I mean, he's athletically, he's tremendous. I think he still looks a little mechanical as he's trying to get all of his routes right.
Six right now, Cam, the three transfers, Caleb and Camden? Like, is it the two holdovers? Cam Coleman
my top six. I finally was able to redo my depth chart.
And the three transfers, by the way, referencing Keandre Unk, that's Robert Lewis and Sam Jackson.
Yeah, those three guys and Cam would be my easy top four. I think Bryce Kane is in that group. He has been in the mix when they've had some of those top guys. I think he is the one that would be in there, and then I would probably go Camden Brown as the other one. I don't know that Caleb Burton's in my top six. I would go Bryce Kane in that group.
And again, it's early and things can change. They're going to scrimmage at least once, maybe twice. We'll find out, how they want to do this. It would not be like for Caleb Burton, you as a holdover, you don't want to have too many guys in front of you trying to climb over to get on, that would feel like a pretty crucial time. As we've mentioned, it's going to go from 9 to 5 or 6 at receiver as far as who's getting a lot of playing time. You don't want to find yourself on the outside looking in, especially if it's you're a guy who's already used a couple of years of eligibility up.
334-321-1390. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll get caught up. We haven't talked to Jason since Auburn picked up a big commitment over the weekend. We'll get his thoughts on that and some other recruiting things and more thoughts on football practice. Anything you would like to talk about, though, come on in and join us. And you can give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
832-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill and Dan joined by Jason Caldwell here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and let's get back to the drive hotline. And Hank is up first. Hey, Hank.
Hey, fellas. I wanted to just ask you a question. I heard Jason talking earlier about, the importance of getting those high-level recruits, and then also how towards the end of the Gus Malzahn years, we kind of lost depth at defensive line. And I guess what the question I'd like to ask is, it might surprise some people that Gus Malzahn averaged like a number 9 recruiting class in his 24/7 composite ranking. So, just talk to me, kind of tell me, and I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer as to Auburn's recent success, but I've just been thinking about, like, what's the difference between the success that Hugh Freeze is having now in recruiting and the lack of success that Gus Malzahn had, especially towards the end of his tenure on the field.
Yeah.
And I'll other than, you know, obviously five's higher than nine. But just if you wouldn't mind speaking to that a little bit, and I'll hang up and listen. Thanks so much.
Appreciate the call, Hank. The first thing I would say is all number nine recruiting classes aren't equal, because one number nine recruiting class could have two offensive linemen in it.
Yeah, that happened more than one time.
And could have, you know, three defensive linemen and 17 defensive backs and wide receivers.
But if you have a bunch of skilled players, you can get a lot of points sometimes and be highly ranked.
And so, it's difficult to have a top 15 recruiting class without signing a top 200 receiver. And by that I mean a receiver who is ranked among the nation's top 200 players. Gus Malzahn did it several times. Like multiple times Auburn would have a class that finished ranked in the top. I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, his last couple of years. You know, Auburn would sign. Like I think Var was one of the years. You know, Var was the top receiver Auburn signed, and he was ranked, you know, 230, 240 nationally. And that's, you know, and you want guys like that, but you also want to be signing. You also want to be competitive for quarterbacks, receivers, offensive tackles, and pass rushers who are top 100, top 150 guys nationally. And I think Auburn was at a couple of positions with Malzahn at the end. Auburn wasn't in the picture for guys at some of the high-value positions. Would that be a fair assessment of it?
Yeah, and I think those spots where you start talking about lines of scrimmage, that's where it becomes a big part of things. I haven't even looked at this, and I'm going to go through and go, okay, like 2018, it was the number 12 class in the country. And you start looking at it and you go, okay, you know, 2018, Cam Stutz was in that class. Jaleel Irvin, who played a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's the only two offensive linemen you signed in a class that was ranked number 12. And you start going, okay, hey, this class looks great. But you start going, okay, when you look at that and you go, well, that's the third or fourth year in a row where you don't have a whole lot of high school offensive linemen in a class, then it becomes really, really hard.
Yeah, and you look at what Hugh Freeze is doing now. I mean, they already have five offensive linemen for this class.
Still recruiting a five-star offensive tackle that they're in very much mm-hmm. in the mix with in Andrew Babalola. And so, yeah, so all classes aren't equal, even if they're both ranked, say, number
eight. The one thing that's a bit of a fallacy about recruiting rankings is you can't really tell if they're filling their needs, if they're filling the needs.
That's
if you had 15 returning offensive linemen, then maybe you might sign just a couple and bring in a transfer. But a lot of it depends on what you have, what's coming back, what you need to fill the holes that are gone.
Correct.
And that's something that no recruiting ranking is going to show. So there can be some false indications from rankings.
Well, you're going to sign. Now, you're never going to be bad if you sign a bunch of highly ranked offensive line, defensive line. And that's never going to be a bad thing. Because that's always going to – you have to have more of those guys than really anywhere else on a team. But if you sign, you know, hey, we're going to get the top four safeties in the country, but you don't sign any linebackers and you don't have a pass rusher, you may have more point, but the other team may be it may be a more balanced class filling those. That's the thing right now. You're looking from your roster standpoint, from a building depth standpoint, all those things, it's already in such a different place. And recruiting ranking wise, I mean, it's gonna get better. I mean, this class has a chance to be three or four by the time this thing's over with, and you would have gotten a quarterback, a couple of running backs, probably a couple of wide receivers, full offensive line, defensive line, pass rushers, linebackers, secondary.
Already got a
kicker, punter.
Yeah, I mean,
that's how you know. Hey, we feel like we're a pretty good spot. You don't have to go load up and sign 14 players at one position because you don't have any left.
Go into the transfer portal for too many. You're always going to have.
You're going to do that.
And yes.
And Malzahn and his staff had success recruiting some of those positions.
Yeah. No question.
Yeah. You don't get ranked, you know, top 15, top 10 doing that.
I would say the most pronounced difference through two full recruiting classes and what they're building for 25. I mean, you look at the receivers we've talked about. I mean, Perry and Cam are guys that there was nobody at the receiver
position.
No,
there weren't receivers. They're also in state.
You had Kobe Hudson, who the previous coaching staff, they did not see eye to eye. He left. He's at UCF now, and he's a preseason Biletnikoff Award watch list. You had a couple of guys.
Oh, sure. I mean,
but you don't have the. You had Seth Williams.
Matthew Hill was a huge recruit.
Yeah. You had some guys. Eli Stove.
Zave Capers.
I mean, there were some guys there, but it's not to this level. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I would say not, and just individually, none of them as a recruit would probably compare to Cam Coleman
or
no.
Perry.
No.
No kidding. Yeah. And so, but there's it's two things. You go, you get that those guys, and then you put them in a position to where they are working their craft and improving it and taking steps forward.
Well,
that was always the thing, is that, hey, you got these guys and they're really talented, but you don't really throw the ball other than on third and long, and it's play action. And you know, like, now you have to put those guys in a position where you're throwing the football and you're using them, and they're, because it doesn't matter how talented you are, you can be the greatest wide receiver ever. If you're not working on it, and you're not catching passes, and the quarterbacks aren't throwing to the wide receivers, and you're not getting game reps, you're not going to get better, and you're not going to be very good.
Appreciate the call. We'll move on, and I believe Milhouse is up next. Hey, Milhouse.
Hey, how are y'all? Y'all hit on one thing, and I'm glad to get Jason, because I trust his judgment on Auburn reporting. He's about as level-headed as any of our beat writers have ever been, so kudos to you, Mr. Caldwell. But I was going about Malzahn, and he kind of hit on that with the receivers. Did anybody on offense skill position ever get better the longer they stayed here while Malzahn was the coach? It seems like every quarterback's first year was their best year, and I don't – just like you said with receivers, when all you're doing is throwing a bubble screen, a deep out, or a fade, and you never throw the ball in between the hashes. If I could figure that out in the stands, you don't think Kirby and Nick Saban could figure that out with 700 people on their staff? And I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, I think obviously running backs, you think about those guys. And I thought Nick Marshall from 13 to 14 as a quarterback improved as a quarterback.
Gus had the luxury of a couple of quarterbacks who started their careers really good, too.
Yeah.
Like you think about Cam and Nick Marshall.
But what was the key to both those teams? The key to both of those teams was offensive line. They had dominant offensive line play. 2017, the key to that team, Jarrett Stidham, Kerryon Johnson, Cam Pettway, the key to those teams was offensive line play. That was always the missing piece, because – If you did not and could not run the football on early downs, you had no chance. It was over with. And that's the case for most offenses. It was absolutely the case in those systems. When they ran the football, they beat anybody. It didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Because then you can do anything you want to. And it's that way for any system that you play in, but especially that one. And if you don't have offensive line group, can't do it. And that was the biggest building piece they had to do when they got here, was restore that group, and they've done a pretty good job.
But no Malzahn quarterback had the Jason Campbell trajectory of struggled and then had a great breakout season after those struggles, and that's how their career ended with that really triumphant final season. There's no Malzahn quarterback you can describe that way, which I think is gives the impression. Well, none of these guys got better, over the course of their careers, which is, I guess if you're using the Campbell model, none of them did. But that also sort of it hides the fact that a couple of them had a ton of success the moment they arrived.
Jason, before we get to our final break, appreciate the call. Want to get your thoughts on? Everybody was expecting it, but picking up Jared Smith this past weekend, the big edge from up in Birmingham, in the Birmingham area. Yeah. Another huge addition for Auburn, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, literally huge. 6'6", probably 255, maybe 260 already right now.
Wow. He still looks lean.
He he was a basketball guy. That's the first time I remember hearing about him. He was at Spain Park, and he was a basketball guy as a freshman. He's continued to develop physically. I think the thing for him is when he takes the field this fall, does he play like he's capable of? Because even it's the same thing. Keldrick Fault did the same thing. You watch Tylan Holm and Keldrick, and you went, man, that guy is a freak, but he didn't play that. Now he's playing that way, and it took him getting to college to do that. But the same thing happened for John Hand. I mean, I was young. My brother played high school football with him, and when he was in high school, he went, oh, man, that guy's never going to make it. And he got to Alabama, and all of a sudden that switch flipped, and he became a guy. I think we're ready to see that for Keldrick Fault, waiting to see that from Jared Smith. But you don't find guys that can move like him, that size, that physical, that frame. I mean, Keldrick is you know, bigger body. Julius Peppers is kind of my when I see Jared Smith, it reminds me, and I mentioned this to Don a few weeks ago, reminds me of Javor Mills, who was a JUCO transfer, right, because he's such a fluid guy. Keldrick's fluid, but he's just a big guy. Jared can bend. He can do all these things. I'm really anxious to see him take – if he turns it loose this year, it's going to be really fun to watch. But this guy's got as much upside as you could have, and Auburn doesn't have a guy like this. Their pass rush guys – I mean, Kieron Crawford is a little bit longer, but most of them are shorter, quicker guys. Right. They don't have that big, long guy like this that could impact things.
Yeah, it's funny. There have been some people going, why is Auburn going after so many edge guys? Can you have too many pass rushers?
Cannot. And especially one like this to where he becomes a guy that you can play defensive end. And he will be comfortable at 280, 285 pounds. Rush third downs.
What happens when you hit the lottery too, and you find one of them, and one of them turns into
turns into Julius Peppers,
a superstar?
Yeah. Absolutely. Then it changes the entire defense. I mean, everything about it. Yes, you can never have enough of those guys. Big, strong, long, athletic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of them you can get.
I mean, folks look at. I mean, yes, the 49ers have done very well attracting and signing some big time offensive pieces. Like that turnaround started when they drafted defensive linemen in the top five, top ten,
solidified the offensive line.
Well, and they were all, yes, and going out and getting Trent Williams too at an incredible
and the guard from Iapati and
yeah, but the thought, all those guys. Yeah, the thought of you know, Trent Williams being the best tackle in the NFL and the Washington sort of trying to play him for, you know, I actually want to, like, you know, lowballing him when it's like, you know, I think that, you know, someone else is probably going to pay him. Like, I don't know what kind of leverage you have there, but no, they drafted defensive linemen high. Like they went very early, over and over and over again, you know, 16, 17, 18, and they hit on all of them. Like they all ended up being very, very good players, and it changed everything. And the way Auburn is recruiting up front defensively, if you hit on some of these guys and they fulfill your potential, yes, you might find a Julius Peppers or a Derrick Brown, and it changes everything defensively about what you can do.
All right, we need to get to our final break of hour number one. A few more minutes with Jason Caldwell here on the Wednesday Drive.
Experience 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final couple of minutes with Jason Caldwell here on the Wednesday Drive. Hey, a reminder that Andy Burcham, usually with us on Tuesdays, he'll be in to start hour number two. So, Jason, in the final couple of minutes, just a couple of highlights of things that you have seen here in the first week of practice that have caught your eye.
Oh, man. I come back to Peyton Thorne. I just listening to players talk about him.
Right.
And from talking to folks that I trust, that just the first thing is that you're in an offense he grew up playing in. I think that's a massive deal. When you get a quarterback that's comfortable, this is what he's – I mean, it's like second hand for him. I think that's a big deal. And so that's one of the things. We'll see, you know, how much – but I think part of that, too, is all of a sudden when you don't have to be everything, you don't have to go and make plays with your legs. You don't – I mean, you can't throw it and catch it, too. you have some help doing those things, I think it takes a little bit of the pressure off and you can just go play football. It feels like a little bit of that early on in camp. So that's one of the things. I think probably the other thing has just been that secondary group. I believed that they were going to be more athletic and more talented. Now, can they translate that and get that seasoning? It feels like early on they have gotten some of that. That's where those wide receivers come back into play. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you have to play against those guys every day. Now you become more prepared for what you're going to see in a season. I think that's where it's going to pay off more than anything. The wide receivers are going to be better. I think it's going to help make this defense.
It's good for both of them. Good for the receivers to be going against these guys in the secondary, but it's really good for the secondary, young secondary.
The other word's aggressive. Thinking about DJ Durkin, talking to players, mm-hmm. guys who have played for him, guys who haven't, and you hear the term aggressive over and over again. And I think that's music to the ears for folks because right now, if you're not playing aggressive football, you're not just going to go stop teams over and over and over again. They're going to move the football. Yep. You better go get it back from them.
You better create some.
That's it. Right. And I think those are probably the things for me early on.
All right, looking forward to it. Jason, before we run out of time, I mean, let everybody know it is a busy, busy time that you guys have got and how they can keep up with it all.
Tons of stuff going on. You're right. You can check us out, Auburn Undercover, part of the 24/7 network. Follow me on Twitter. Little Instagram every once in a while at ITAT Jason. And just trying to kind of right now keep your head above water. But I think a lot of cool things that we've been doing and adding on, hopefully kind of keeping everybody updated on the situation. So check us out there, and we'll be rolling into Saturday, and we'll see what we see.
Oh, yeah, looking forward to it. See you over there, Jason.
Absolutely.
Our thanks to Jason Caldwell, who's with us here on Wednesdays. We've got our top of the hour break. We're halfway done. But don't go anywhere. Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, joins us when we come back for hour number two of the Wednesday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we are very pleased to be joined by the voice of the Auburn Tigers, who lightens up the studio, literally.
Literally.
When he comes in, he turns the light switch on.
I'm told this. I have multifocal contact lenses, and I'm told they're much better in light than they are in dim. And you guys are like Venus flytrap in here.
That's right.
In the studio, so I always turn the lights on when I come in. I'll turn it back off.
Great to see you, Andy Burcham.
Good to be here.
Thank you. Well, before we get into any Auburn athletics, how was the show last night?
It was fabulous. We went when it was announced that Idina Menzel was going to be at the Gouge Performing Arts Center. We decided that we had talked about going to see her elsewhere, and I thought, well, if she's going to be here, we've got to go. And then we also got the VIP sound check with some folks.
Well, as a caller said yesterday, I mean, if anybody's going to get a VIP to that, it's got to be Andy Burcham.
No, well, it had nothing to do. It just had to have how much we paid for it. But it was and there were, I don't know how many folks were there for her sound check, and it was her band and Idina Menzel. And they did a bit of a sound check for about 10, 15 minutes. And then she took questions the rest of the time.
Wow.
And there were a lot of young, aspiring
artists
there. Some in the musical theater department at Auburn, some younger that were, you know, wanted. And she was incredibly gracious.
My advice to them would be get as good as Idina Menzel. And you will
be as talented.
You will have an excellent chance of one day succeeding.
But she was really very gracious with her time with the folks, and then we all got a picture with her. I haven't seen the picture yet. And then the concert was a little bit later that evening.
But I wanted to know. You said you had a question.
I did,
but you didn't get a chance to ask.
Well,
are you kidding?
It was my fault. That's my fault. It wasn't. I waited too long to put my
generous,
hand up.
I think it was generous of Andy to let the young aspiring artists all ask their questions first.
That was more important. Here was my question, all right? And Jan and I have seen Wicked 4 different times. Once on Broadway, twice at the, well, I guess I've seen it 3 times, twice more at the Fox. And just, I mean, it's a fabulous musical. And the music's terrific. And, of course, she was the original Elphaba, the Wicked Witch of the West, and won a Tony Award for that. And, of course, Defying Gravity is the defining signature song. It's the end of Act One. And that character singing, it's a fabulous song, and she sings it at the end. She's elevated.
Right.
She's flying.
She's suspended, yeah.
Right. And, of course, it ends on those two or three long notes, right? I think if you know this. And so my question was going to be to her, because there are variations of it now, and everyone, all sopranos try to sing that song. And, of course, the movie version will be out in Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to her was, those final triumphant notes, was that her, or was that written, or is it a combination of both? I thought that was a pretty good, but I didn't get a chance to ask it. I blew it. But her concert was just, and it was packed. It was packed last night at the Gouge.
That's great.
And she goes for 2 hours, no intermission. And it was some Broadway standards, some of her own music. So she did a jazz set while she was sitting on the grand piano there. Her band is really good, by the way. They have some chops now. And she's just incredibly talented. One of the funniest parts, and she uses Schumer, she uses the introduction of John Travolta of her at the Oscars, where he just...
we were talking about that yesterday.
Where he just completely blows her. He has no idea what her name is. And she uses that audio to introduce the song Let It Go. That's how she starts Let It Go. And it's hilarious, because she tells the story about being on stage, you know, what a triumphant moment this is for her.
And your name is completely butchered.
Exactly.
So, what was it again, Dan?
He seems to know who she is, because he calls her the wickedly talented, and he leans on wicked, like, in a way where it's like,
what was it?
You know, and then he calls her Adele Dazeem, which is not even close to Idina Menzel.
And it's a very funny story on her part, describing that moment.
Folks, even if they don't necessarily know exactly who we're talking about, they've assuredly heard Let It Go, because it's songs, you know, inescapable.
From Frozen, from the animated feature Frozen.
Mm-hmm. She was on a handful of episodes of Glee as well, and leaned on sort of her musical theater background.
She started in Rent.
Yes.
Both the Broadway version and the movie version. Of course, really became widely known as a result of Wicked, and then you're right, Glee, and then obviously the Let It Go part. She was the voice of that,
and somebody, this must have been one of the very first things ever put on YouTube, because it was uploaded in 2006. But she performed Defying Gravity on Letterman while she was on the cast of Wicked, back in the first half of the 2000s. And so if you want to see that, that's available on the internet. If you want to see sort of what Andy's talking about, you can get a better context of her performing, because Letterman used to have performances from Broadway shows coming to do. I believe there's actually, like, twice he brought in the cast of the ill-fated Spider-Man musical, and I think it's like the only record there is of the Spider-Man musical is that there were two performances by the cast on the Letterman on the Letterman show. At some
Jan and I love musical theater, and we've been to Broadway, we've been to the Fox in Atlanta, we've seen locally at the Opelika Center for the Performing Arts in the Gouge. We're blessed to have some outstanding
facilities like that
here. So it was fun last night. It was really a lot of fun to be there. We saw a lot of people that we knew that enjoyed it, and this is the understatement of the world. She is incredibly talented. She's dazzlingly talented, and has just a wonderful voice and a great show. She can put on a show now.
That's great to hear. We missed you yesterday, well, but I mean, we figured you were probably enjoying your time.
It's one of the last times that Jan and I have a chance to do something like that before
things really get cranked.
Before things get going at this point. So,
do you have a dream booking for the Googe? I feel like we've talked about this before. Is there somebody out there that's like, and I understand, you know, it's not necessarily a venue that's going to get Springsteen or someone who's filling stadiums or.
I tell you what, they've had some pretty good acts there.
I mean, it's not. I feel like it's a little bit more specialized and a little bit more. It's
more intimate.
Yeah, it's a different kind of venue.
And let me add one more: the River Center in Columbus.
That's true.
Which is part of Columbus State. Jan works for Columbus State. That's a fabulous venue as well. So I mean, you've got opportunities around here to see this kind of entertainment. Without having to drive a long way.
Mm-hmm. Bill, who was it you booked a show to see, and then he announced a show at the Googe? Like, was it Vince Gill?
Yeah.
Or so it was somebody like that, where Bill had tickets to see him in Birmingham, Atlanta.
I mean, and then the Googe got it later, after we already had tickets.
It's a surprise. And we've said before, I would love, and I know we're probably running out of time there with him, but I would love Randy Newman. To make an appearance at some point
while he's still performing,
I would love
I would love to.
You know who I'd like to see, and I doubt we'd ever see him here anymore, is Billy Joel.
Oh yeah,
just he
just wrapped up.
Just he and the piano. That's it. I would really just let him.
No kidding.
I guess that would be my guy.
Yeah, have you seen him?
I've never seen Billy Joel. Either. I had the opportunity when he was teaming up with Elton John a couple times and never went. I regret it.
Is he still doing the monthly New York show?
I think he just finished the last one at the end of July.
Oh, wow. Because
I think that was Madison the end Square of his 10-year run.
Yeah.
Which is remarkable. 10 years he did a monthly show at Madison Square Garden, and it was sold out pretty much every time he did it.
He's the guy I think I'd like to see.
I'm with you there. I'll tell you what, let's get to a break. We'll talk some sports
maybe
when we come back on the other side with Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, here on the Wednesday Drive.
It's back to school time.
334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. 5:14 on this Wednesday afternoon. And yes, we're fortunate to have the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, with us here in the studio for another segment. And Andy, we were talking a little bit. One thing you mentioned, this just, we haven't seen them on the field. We haven't seen them playing against any competition. But just when you see this team, you can tell this is not the same team as last year or the last couple of years.
This is. When you say when they get off the bus, are they impressive looking? This is an impressive looking. It's more impressive than we have seen from this Auburn team from a physical, from a stature standpoint in a while. And it starts in that wide receiver room, the guys up front, offensively, defensively. It's a different looking Auburn football team. And, Hugh Freeze talked about this from the get-go. And that first class was heavy in the transfer portal because they had to get guys. They had to get bodies here. And I think they did as well as they possibly could. But they went to work on this 24 signing class. And that continues with the 25 class, the 26 class, even the 27 class right now. And listen, it doesn't – there are other schools. Ole Miss is one that is transfer portal heavy every single year, and it has certainly paid off. I mean, look at the expectations – in Oxford after a fabulous season a year ago. So it isn't like this. There's not a blueprint for it. But I believe that Hugh Freeze believes the best way at Auburn is to build this from the high school ranks up.
Yeah, you can go about it in different ways, but you still are going to have talent and depth of talent. And that's the other thing, that when I look out there and I just see the second unit and then the next unit, it's like, wow, those guys look the part for sure. I mean, again, we'll see the results, but they look the part right now.
I also think this. It doesn't hurt that they're building these classes from a high school level up, and the classes that are coming forth from the state of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some fabulous, including, I mean, we just from just go from a wide receiver unit and linebackers for the 24 class. And the 25 class, the 26 class, I'm hearing are just as good or even better, and some maybe from a defensive standpoint moving forward. So, and from all indications, and you guys have talked about it and talked in specifics, from all indications, Auburn is winning the war in the state of Alabama right now.
Well, in the best period of Auburn football over the last 50 years, right. Coach Dye's teams were built from within about a 300 or 400 mile radius.
Alabama, Georgia, Florida, some Mississippi.
Right.
That's what he did, and that's what he built in the 80s. And it's tough to find a program that was better consistently than the Auburn Tigers were in the 1980s under Coach Dye. And, you know, we'll see if that pays off in Georgia. It's certainly paying off right now in the state of Alabama. Does it pay off in Florida? Does it pay off in Mississippi? Sounds like it is. So we have seen this blueprint at Auburn before.
Right. It has worked.
Exactly.
Well, and it's not like you're in a drought-stricken area, too, when it comes to talent.
No.
If you are, you need to get creative, sure. Right? You think about how Nebraska built their program.
Tennessee.
Tennessee would go outside the immediate Knoxville area to go get a lot of their talent because they couldn't just wall off, you know, 150-mile radius and say, we're going to build our championship this way. At Auburn, not only do you have places that produce a lot of high-quality football players within the immediate area, you also have some spots when you think about the southern half of the state, the Florida Panhandle, up to Panama City or so,
Atlanta.
Southern half of Georgia and Atlanta. Like, those are places where Auburn is either the closest big-time school or one of the two or three closest big-time schools.
Just and another example of recruiting close to home, ask Bruce Pearl how important Atlanta is to his program,
kidding.
For goodness sakes.
And Jason's made a point, too, which is, I think, lost on some folks when you talk about recruiting regionally versus recruiting nationally. And not that recruiting nationally is a mistake or anything.
No, not at all.
Let's go get them. But especially in this era when kids can leave and they can retain their eligibility, the players that are far from home and, you know, the players that you went to get out of California or out of the Pacific Northwest or up from the, you know, up
the
from
Northeast.
Yeah, like players like that, those might be players that are less likely to stick it out if times get tough. And
it's tough if you're homesick and you're from thousands of miles away as opposed to a couple of hours.
It's hard enough when you're not winning no matter where you're from, but you factor that in too.
I know you guys were there as well yesterday, and I sat down with some of the guys after practice for War Eagle Plus. I was really impressed with Jaron Bug Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Really impressed with Sam Jackson. I could have gone a half hour.
Sam Jackson is
what an engaging young man.
I think they went about 15 or 20 minutes with him over there at the table.
I kept bothering him and asking him questions, Sam Jackson was
awesome. He's a great interview.
What you get out of Sam Jackson, too, it's unique because you get the perspective that nobody else would have as a quarterback turned receiver. You get the perspective that nobody else really on the team
knows Peyton like he does.
As someone who's known Peyton Thorne a really long time. And on top of all that, he also looks like he's probably going to play a little bit at receiver.
Well,
like he's also
he and Peyton are roommates. Mm-hmm. Didn't realize that until we talked yesterday, and he talked about this. I mean, they are.
Did he talk to you about when he was in high school?
Yes.
Yeah, because he said he'd go over to Peyton's after every ball game.
Yeah. Well, and in high school he played receiver to get an opportunity to play. I mean, he really hasn't been trained as a receiver until he comes here at Auburn, because he was a quarterback playing receiver in high school.
Right.
He was a quarterback at Cal. He is now a receiver.
One thing is hard to train is the speed that he has.
Yeah.
The guy can really, really run.
And as he mentioned yesterday, even though he wasn't playing receiver, the time he spent as a quarterback helped him understand what offenses are trying to do. So he knows what, on every play, he knows what the team is trying to accomplish and how he can help them accomplish that. And that's really valuable.
And one of the things he talked about with us yesterday was the difference in the rooms that he's been in. And this was not a slam to the Cal quarterback room. It was a comparison of a quarterback room and a receiver room. Because the quarterback room, typically, how many guys are playing? One.
Right.
Receiver room, and he said, all of these guys are getting an opportunity to play, including himself. And he, it was an interesting dynamic, I think, to him to go from that quarterback room at Cal to the wide receiver room at Auburn. And, of course, we all have – we're all excited to see what that wide receiver room does this year. I like the mix in the receiver room. I like these transfers that are here, including Sam and Keandre Lambert-Smith. And then
Robert Lewis is on the Biletnikoff
list. Right, and Robert Lewis, I mean, was a record setter at Georgia State. And then, you, of course, you've got the Freeze Four.
Right.
And a couple of these guys that are back. And he talked about Cam Brown yesterday and how much of a leader he is in that room. How many times have we talked about that in the past?
No, you're right. And did you were around for Cam today, weren't you? I left before Cam.
They decided not to.
Oh, so he didn't come in?
Yeah, they pulled the plug on Cam Brown today. And
he was scheduled to come in today. We got four or five more guys
today. Him next week. I got about 14 minutes with Brendan Frazier today, and he was outstanding.
Got some great stuff with Jason Jones and a couple of other guys today. Andy, it's interesting. I mean, there are buzzwords that go around. I know Hugh's word is gratitude for this year, but there are two words for me. Okay. Offense, it's comfortable. Defense, it's aggressive. Every offensive player that we have talked to has talked about how comfortable they are in this system with the fits.
Seems like it starts with Thorne too, right?
It absolutely does. But Hugh Freeze has talked about he's much more comfortable this year because it's his offense and it's Peyton's offense, and the offensive players are just comfortable with that. The defensive players are giddy with how aggressive DJ Durkin's defense is.
And for a guy like Connor Lou, I think he is more comfortable in the offense and the offensive system. He's just more comfortable as the starting center now in his true sophomore season. He said it. We talked with him yesterday, and he said, yeah. I said, what was year number one like for you? I mean, there's all these expectations, but he said it was a lot. I felt like I was drinking out of a fire hose for a while.
I'm sure.
And I said, well, when did you feel like you had a handle? He said it was pretty late in the season last year. He feels comfortable in that role this year, not only as the starting center, the guy that's making calls. I think he just feels comfortable. Listen, the expectations are there for him, and he's fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every time Hugh Freeze talks about Connor Lou, what does he say? He's a future NFL player.
Right.
He's a guy that's going to be in the league.
He talks about his leadership, and here he is as a sophomore.
Right, as a true sophomore.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's really, really fun to look at. Really looking forward to the opportunities we get. And, again, I'll mention it every hour. We're very appreciative of the opportunities we're having as media to be able to see as much of practice, get as many of the players. We've got the offensive assistants tomorrow. So that's great. That's great for us, and I know that the fans really appreciate that as well.
And that's thanks to Coach Freeze. It's also thanks to Shelley Poe and Kirk Sampson and those folks and the players for making themselves available. They seem happy right now to come in and get a chance to talk with us all, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. No question.
Yeah.
Andy, before you go, you mentioned basketball a little while ago. We got the official word. Wow, what a non-conference lineup for Auburn basketball this year.
Bill, you've been at this longer than I have at Auburn. I don't ever recall a non-conference schedule like this. I was going to say remotely close. Maybe that's a little strong. But
I don't know that there have been many that would be. I mean, there would occasionally be, a UNLV. I mean, there'd be a big name.
Right. But with Purdue in Birmingham – on the 21st, that's Merry Christmas, the announcement that we'd heard for a while, they finally have it finalized with playing Houston at the Toyota Center in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Hope we get a chance to see Jabari while we're down there. That's the second open weekend for football,
right?
Which I was happy about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was happy about that. The talent and the teams that Auburn has the opportunity to play in Hawaii at the Maui Classic.
You got your flight booked.
I have my flight. It is booked. It's going to be a long one. It's going to be an interesting week. But, yes, I'm booked. The confirmation that it is Ohio State.
Right.
That Auburn will face in Atlanta in Holiday Hoopsgiving. And I think that's one of the reasons that Atlanta continues to pay off for Auburn in a recruiting battle. I mean, Auburn.
Go there and showcase in Auburn, Atlanta. That's tremendous.
This is the fifth or sixth straight year. that Auburn has played in that event. That pays off for everyone included. And then, of course, Duke at Cameron Indoor, which will be fun. Man, that's just going to be a fun environment.
You know you've got a seat.
So I do. That's at the very top of that gym.
So many people that are hoping.
Been there. I am in the crow's nest up there.
I have any further from the court, the radio call at Cameron Indoor, if you were any further from the court, you'd be on the roof. You'd be literally atop the roof.
And like you, I've done women's basketball games there. I've done two different tournaments there. So I'm aware of just getting to that booth. I have called games.
That is a little staircase.
Yes, it is. That's a little scary. I hope that Bruce's knee holds up when he comes up for the postgame show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But
I even get cell service to call down there.
I have done games high atop. Remember at Vanderbilt, that's where you used to call games up in the crow's nest. I'm not sure I've called a basketball game further from the floor than the 21-22 season. No. Than the first year I did it, 1920, when Auburn played in Tampa against USF.
That would be 2019.
Yeah, did I say?
You said 1920.
Well, yeah.
Andy's been doing it a long time. Not that long. But he wasn't doing it back in 1920.
Right. But we
2019, 2020
season. That was the year that they were that the tournament, the SEC tournament was there.
Yeah.
But
was it Amalie Arena? Was it the Sun Dome or the hockey arena?
The hockey arena.
It was the hockey arena. Okay.
And that's where the story goes, because we didn't do the games from the sideline with TV. We did them from the hockey booths, which is always at the top of the arena.
Oh, yeah.
And that was Sonny and I are up there, and we're like, Sonny, did you bring your binoculars? Nope.
That building has changed its name about 10 times in the last 20 years, too. Mm-hmm. It used to be the Ice Palace. It was the St. Pete Times Forum. I don't know if the St. Pete Times is still, know what they call that paper. I don't know.
I'm not certain. But anyway, looking forward, obviously, to this basketball season. Not only for the non-conference schedule, which is as ambitious as I've ever seen at Auburn, but I look forward to watching how this team develops. I think this team could be quite special.
Andy, I know we're up against it here, but wanted to give you a chance to shout out some Auburn Olympians. I know
there's been a couple.
There's Valterezi, right? The Palestinian flag bearer. You've got Ajayi.
I think there is someone from Auburn that competes internationally that will be in the 200-meter final. It is a good representation. It's going to get better, I believe.
Yeah, I think
swimming,
I think you're right.
Track and field. I wouldn't be surprised one day if we don't see some basketball players, both men and women, one day back on those teams. We've had Charles, we've had Ruthie Bolton, Vicky Orr, Carolyn Jones have all played for the U.S. women's team.
Well, Walker has recently played for Team USA, just not in the Olympic team, but he's on the...
I won't be shocked one day if we don't see Jabari. He may be the next Olympian playing basketball for the United States.
I think Walker and Jabari would both have an outside shot at the 2028 team. I think there's a...
That'll be fun.
With a lot of these guys playing their last year, it's going to be a very different-looking 2028 men's team, and I think Walker and Jabari both have it. Have a chance.
I have never actively rooted for the 1500 final in men's track and field like
that. Wow, that was fabulous.
I have no idea who that young man is.
No,
but it was sure fun.
It was
to root
great
for
because
him.
He kept talking about the Norwegian.
Yeah, the Norwegian.
he kept talking about himself.
The Norwegian and the Brit.
Right.
Those were the two guys going back and forth. And the American slides
and,
in there
and nearly won too. I mean, that was eyelash from being
the U.S. finished 1-3. It was fun to watch.
It was.
Yeah.
Andy, great stuff.
My pleasure, guys.
I mean, you've got busy times coming up.
Yeah. Jason Campbell on the Talking Tigers podcast this week, talking about the 2004. 20-year anniversary coming up. Next week, we talk soccer. Of course, soccer is the first team to compete. As a matter of fact, they compete today in exhibition. And so Karen Hoppe and her newest assistant, Christina Whitehead, on the podcast. In 2 weeks, it's Will Herring, and we're sitting down with Don Dunn tomorrow.
Great.
Yeah.
To talk with Don about that 2004 season coming up.
That'll be great. Looking forward to all that. Thanks a lot, man. Really
My pleasure.
Appreciate you coming in today.
Have a great day, guys.
We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll open up the phone lines. Love for you to join in. 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
NAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Hey, our thanks to Andy Burcham for joining us for the first couple of segments here in hour number two. And, of course, Jason Caldwell for his regular visit in hour number one. Let's get to The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And that number again, 334-321-1390. And Tex gets us started. Hey, Tex, warm enough for you?
Did you show Dan that
picture? I showed Dan. Yeah, fortunately, I think that's the temperature probably inside the car after it's been in the sun. But it feels like you have been like in the sun, literally in the sun.
The car was in the shade.
Well,
and I've been driving for 10 minutes, and that was the temperature.
Well, I think you may need to get that checked. I doubt that it's 119. I know it's hot in Baton Rouge, but I don't know about 119.
I look down there, and I feel like Jay Crane doing this. I'm hotter than Auburn football right now. because that's what made me want to call today is, you know, I've been around a lot of coaches and players that have all played at multiple levels and had great success. And I have a friend who had a great deal of success in baseball for the Giants who always said, it's all about attitude and approach. Attitude and approach.
Mm-hmm.
The attitude of this team, not just one guy or two guys, or really not even really the coaching staff, when's the last time y'all have heard players talk so much about other players in a positive manner on a team in Auburn?
You know, it's a good point. And we have gotten so many different players. You know, sometimes you wondered in the past when you only got like the same handful of players over and over because you felt like they knew what they were supposed to say. We've gotten so many different players, not all starters, not all, tremendously experienced. We've got some guys with a lot of experience, some with a year or two, others that are newcomers that seem to be on the same page.
You know, Tex, I would say the last time things felt this calm in August, you go back to the 2018 season. And I know that's not like that wasn't a huge year on the field for Auburn, but that was coming off of a 10-win season.
Right.
You bring back
the quarterback.
Yeah, you bring back the same head coach. You bring back the same quarterback. And so a lot of the – but you think about every offseason since then, right? Whether it was you had a competition with the true freshman Bo Nix winning it in 2019. You had COVID disrupting everything about the preseason in 2020. You had a new head coach in 21. Harsin, you had a new everything in 22. Bo Nix was gone, and there were a bunch of players, and you know it was tumultuous around Harsin there. And then last year, you had 50 new players, 16 or 17 new players in starting roles going into the fall. So it's very different than it's been the last couple of seasons. And whether or not that means you have a much better season, in the win loss record, I don't know, but It's drastically different.
Well, Bill, I remember in 1982 when they introduced a football coach not a whole lot of people had ever heard about at Auburn at a basketball game. And the excitement that came from that is about the only thing I can link to this is when they announced Coach Dye coming in as the next football coach. People went crazy because of his famous comment about how long is it going to
60
take to
minutes.
Alabama, 60 minutes.
Yep.
People went crazy. I'm getting more phone calls today from fans and or Auburn people who aren't saying we're going to win because we're great. They're talking about, do you hear how the players talk about each other? Do you hear about people talking about what they look like physically and what they're doing physically out there? And it's really different if it comes from coaches, but when you hear it from other players, what was the comment the other day about the meatball?
Meatball of power.
Well, actually, we've had multiple instances now of players describing other players.
Yeah,
on the
Maurice
team.
Williams is a meatball of power, according to Jalen McCloud.
And then Jeremiah Wright was just called a little meatball by one of his teammates, I think, a day later.
If he's a little meatball, I'd hate to see a big one.
That's a spicy little meatball. Yeah.
So, and I just remember any championship teams I've ever played on, I listened to the way this team talks about each other, and you would have found that players on that team and teammates talked about each other like that. It is really, it's really neat to see. That's a weird word, but I'm a kid of the 70s, so neat.
It's groovy.
Is the word that would be cool. It's groovy, yeah. It's cool, too. And then the coaches, even so though you hear them talk, Coach Freeze is pretty, I don't want to say monotone, but he's actually really calm when he speaks about it. But you can sense he's got a little bit of excitement in him about this group.
Oh, he's
So that's what it's not like, I hate to say this, if any of my LSU friends are listening, you know it's the truth. They're always going to be great, and they always got the greatest players, no matter what. They could have been 0-12 last year, and they're going to be great this year. This is just different to me. It's been a while since we've had this feeling, and the way the fans are reacting too. Nobody's going out poking their chest out. They're just excited about what they're hearing from the players and the coaches and the media. So, anyway, I just thought I'd share that. But it's been a long time since we've had that.
No, you're right.
And by the way, for those that want to know, the temperature on that picture I sent Bill was 119, and I had been driving for 10 minutes.
Tex, I'm glad you made a really good point there, and I wanted to ask you about, I mean, first of all, I think you're absolutely right, Auburn. It has, you know, the conditions are right for Auburn to have a far out season, but you also have, and I think that, like, with, and I guess it's the storyteller, like the dramatist in me that sees, like, these guys. I've asked the question to a couple of the players these last couple of days. These guys that had the opportunity to leave, your fourth year and fifth year and 6 year seniors on both sides of the ball, your Zykevious Walkers and your Luke Deals and your Brendan Frazier's. And, I mean, these guys, Jeremiah Wright, like, there's any number of them. I mean, it would be so cool for those guys to get to have a really big season in their last year, to be rewarded for everything they've put in on a real roller coaster of a time as Auburn football. And Connor Liu asked him about that yesterday because he's a sophomore on the leadership council. And he was saying, to send out the real Auburn men. And that's a phrase that for a long time would make people kind of roll their eyes because it was cited so often. But when, especially when Auburn was struggling in recruiting and people would say, well, they're bringing in real Auburn men. You know, that was like, oh, that's great. But, you know, but
bringing some real Auburn football players.
Yeah, but when Connor Liu's talking about these fourth and fifth and sixth year guys that signed with Auburn out of high school, like, those are Auburn men. And to be able to send them away with a triumphant last season would just be really special.
Well, and nobody wants to go out on the downside. I think the transfer portals made it easier for you to run from it. Mm-hmm. But out of troubled waters often comes a really calm tide. So it's – I hate to use the word tide, but – it does. It creates out of calm waters. If a group comes together, like it sounds, this group is coming together. And I'm not saying 12-0, and I'm not even. I'd be happy with 8-4, and I hate to admit that, but if we could get to 8-4, that would be a huge building block for us. And but out of that turbulence that's been going on, I think something kind of really special is going to come out of this group. And we may not know it for a little while, but I think something special is coming out of this group. That's just my opinion. And I can't wait till the first home game, and I'm glad that it's at night.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, try to stay cool, Tex.
Talk to you guys.
All right.
All right,
take care. All right, 334-321-1390, a full bank of calls, and John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, listen, I was looking at the win total for Auburn, and DraftKings has us at 7.5. And I think seven, we can get to seven. I think eight is doable. But when I look at the schedule, the eighth win would have to either be Oklahoma at home.
Or Georgia Kentucky away, on the road.
Missouri. Yeah, well, I'm counting that as a win. That's going to be a tough out.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, it is. It's no guarantee. But the fact Auburn has eight home games is a big step forward if they can take advantage.
If you've got Auburn beating Kentucky, then you would need the eighth win to either be A&M, Oklahoma, or Missouri, presumably. Like, if you've got Auburn beating Kentucky, the eighth win would need to be one of those three games, either Oklahoma.
Either Oklahoma at home, Georgia away, Missouri away, Texas A&M away, and Alabama away.
Well, I was saying, assuming that Georgia and Alabama feel like the longer.
Actually, A&M's here.
Well, yeah, so assuming Georgia and Alabama are your longer shots, I would say your chance at a swing game, an eighth game. And that's where we keep saying the difference between 7 wins and 10 wins could be a select number of plays in Kentucky, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Texas A&M. Like, those could be, you know, the difference between winning and losing those games, Bill, right? Like, the margin in those games could be a handful of plays, and it decides if you're 7-5 or 10-2 winning the playoff.
Or somewhere in between, obviously, yes.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, the more I hear about this team, I think eight's doable, but it's still going to be a tough road.
Well, you know, I mean, you look at it, and Auburn could have won 8 last year. They really could have.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they are much better prepared, I mean, as far as the resources they have with the talent on this team. Now they're just going to get we've got to see them get out and do it. But it's nice to really feel like, oh, you're not just dreaming, to think that you could have a pretty decent year.
I think it would be disappointing at this point to drop both Oklahoma and A&M.
Oh, yes.
A&M,
yes,
even though A&M beat Auburn last year in College Station.
Even though they're both ranked.
They're both ranked. And right now I think that people would tell you they're favored.
Sure.
And Auburn's the underdog in both those games. Oklahoma with a lot of change to a team that was very good last year. People forget, 10-1 Oklahoma team last year. But a team that's very good, but that's their first road game. And then A&M, a lot has changed since the last time Auburn played Texas A&M, including a new head coach in College Station.
Do y'all think Missouri is overrated?
Maybe a little. I think they're pretty darn good, though. I mean, I think Eli and that offense are very dangerous.
Missouri looks like they have 8 games on their schedule that they should win convincingly. Like, Missouri has 4 out-of-conference games against teams that are seemingly overmatched, and Missouri has 4 games against 4 of the worst teams in the conference, according to the projections. Arkansas, Mississippi State, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt, I believe, are on the Missouri schedule. And then the question becomes, do they have, you know, it's Auburn, Alabama, Oklahoma, and A&M. You know, can they win 2 of those 4? And if they do,
they probably win 10 games.
They're probably a 10-win team. If they lose all 4 of those games, it, you know, 8-4 is still a solid year. It would feel like a real missed opportunity. Because they have it. I mean, look, I think Missouri could go to the look. If they win 3 of those 4 games, Bill,
they're probably playing for the title. Is that what you're thinking?
They're probably a 7-1 team in the SEC championship.
7-1
game,
get you in the
competition for that. I mean, they avoided Georgia, they avoided Texas, they avoided LSU, they avoided Ole Miss on the schedule this year. Like it's. I overrated's a dangerous word. This feels like a huge opportunity for Missouri, and if they were to stumble, it would seem like a missed opportunity.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Good hearing from you, John.
Great stuff.
We need to get to our final break. Jerry, hold on. You're up when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.